this evening, starting at sunset, for those who observe their mikre, those invitations to be called out and meet with God, based upon the time that the light just begins renewing on the surface of the moon prior to sunset, prior to the start of a new day, would find that this evening is the time that we will begin a 7+1 day celebration of Sukkah. The first day, which will be tomorrow, for those who use the more exacting means to determine when to celebrate these Moed Mikre, is a Shabbaton, a special day set apart to Yahweh, as is the 8th day, a Shabbaton. Now, I do want to make it clear that I have no disagreement with those who actually look out at the sky late in the afternoon, as they know that we're approaching the time of a new moon, and try to observe the transition between a complete new moon, no light whatsoever reflected off the surface of the moon, and the first sliver. It's a challenge for most of us. For example, from where I live, I do not have a view of the western horizon. And so I wouldn't even be able to see it. Second, if you live in an area where there are clouds around sunset, you wouldn't be able to see it. If there's haze, chances are you wouldn't be able to see it. And it's always difficult because the first sliver of light on a renewing moon, the moon is very close to setting at dusk. And the timing that the moon sets and the sun sets are very close together. You know, full moons typically rise right around sunset, but slivers of moons typically set right around sunset. So it's a challenge to do, but, I certainly don't have any issue with those who take that approach. And for those that take that approach, I think that they are celebrating Sukkah starting one day after I will be this evening. In fact, a good friend wrote me this morning, talked about how with young children, they were able to show them the first sliver of light on the surface of the moon back on the first day of Teruah, which is the first day of the seventh month, and how that was part of the teaching experience. I applaud it. I think it's wonderful, even though they celebrated Teruah one day after I did. The thought process and the visual communication and the discussion that followed, marvelous in this regard. I'm certain that God has a perspective as to what is exactly the beginning of each one of these seven individual Moed Mikre. And while I'm convinced that when he fulfills them himself, for example, he's already fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Bekorah, and Shavuah, in year 4000 Yah, which was 33 CE in our pagan calendars, and he's going to fulfill Yom Kippurim and Sukkah in year 6000 Yah, which is year 2033 on our Roman Catholic calendars, he will precisely determine when the Day of Reconciliations will occur, as well as Sukkah. And I want to tell you that for those who say that he is going to use the observational method. Now, I have no issue with Children of the Covenant using the observational method. I don't think God is, because his perspective isn't the same as ours. Second of all, as we approach the end of the tribulation and the fulfillment of Yom Kippurim, which Yahweh says that his return precludes mankind from destroying all life on this planet. So it's a hellish time. And we know that the sun is darkened at this time. We know that there has been a horrendous asteroid strike. We know that there's been nuclear war. We know that the planet is in a terrible time of upheaval. And so there is every indication to suggest that the moon's light won't be easily discernible. So you're not going to be able to use the observational method from most places around the earth during the end of the tribulation. It's going to be calculated. And you can calculate it now to know that Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, equated to our Roman Catholic pagan calendars, is sunset in Jerusalem about 6:20 p.m. on October 2nd in 2033. And then 5 days later, on a natural Shabbat, will be the Shabbat of Sukkah. And from that point on, in year 6000 Yah, all the way through the next 1,000 years, in year 7000 Yah, and the commencement of Sukkah in year 7000 Yah, Yahweh is going to camp out with us here on earth. We're going to celebrate the fulfillment, if you will, of this day of Sukkah. And it's all about camping out with humankind. If you want to understand what Sukkah represents, the best thing to do is to read what the Torah has to say about Adam, Chawa, Yahweh, and the Garden of Eden. Because it is that same celebration of life and relationship that will be experienced during the 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah. We come full circle. 6,000 years ago, we were booted out of the Garden of Eden because we rejected Yahweh's testimony. But soon, now at the full consummation of 6,000 years from that date, we will be readmitted into the Garden of Eden because the entire earth is going to be transformed back to the conditions of the Garden of Eden. Yahweh is going to be here walking on this earth with us, present with us, communing and conversing with us, and we're going to be back in, with a full embrace of his testimony. His Torah literally written inside of us by him, becoming the part of the fabric of our lives. So we're returning from the place that we came. And you might say, well, why go through the 7,000 years of human history to get back there? Well, Yahweh created Adam, and Adam would have been sufficient. He would have been happy just having a relationship with Adam. But he said, you know, for Adam to have an appreciation for why Yahweh wanted to have a son, it was important for Adam to be given a woman, Chawa, so that they collectively could have children and experience that same purpose, that same joy that Yahweh designed creation to enable. All of the universe, the very creation of life, the invention of life, was all designed because Yahweh wanted something he did not have.
It kind of goes the same with us as well. If you're a good dad, mm-hmm. you grow up and you show your son how to do things, and then at some mm-hmm. point you want him to be able to go out and do his own.
Right. Exactly.
And that's exactly how the whole process plays out. He spends the
right.
time with them. He teaches them. He gets them going.
Right.
And he's like, now you got to go do your own thing.
Right. You know, for example, I have a son who is now married. And while I want to tell you the happiest days of my life was when my adult son, after graduating from graduate school, came back for a year while he was sending out resumes searching for a job. And then after he would do that in the morning, we'd go off and we'd do things. We got to go play golf, go, you know, but baseball games and that sort of thing. We had, I would say it's the best year of my life, is when he was back in our home with my wife and I. Just loved it. And I got the same experience for 2 years with our youngest son. Happiest time of my life. To be able to share quality moments with my sons, particularly when they grew up, you know. And, you've invested in them, you've given them opportunities, and then they return home as adults. That's why Yahweh, you know, once he adopts us into his family on Bukurim, we are enriched and empowered on Shavuot, so we can grow up, and he has the opportunity of sharing this marvelous experience with us and his help. But while I enjoyed that immensely, I knew that it was in my son's best interest for him to leave the house, for him to go off and get a job and to have his own home, find a wife, and raise his own family. And he's in, you know, he now has his own job, his own home. He's married. They don't yet have children. But that whole process is, as you've said, Scott, is part of the joy of having a son or daughter and having them do this. And so Yao is in exactly the same position. He realizes that's part of our growth, and our growth is what stimulates his growth. The more he can enable us to grow in our knowledge and understanding and our love and our perspective, the more he grows through the quality of the relationship we have with him. So you're right. That's exactly why Adam was given Chava in the garden, and that they could explore the same kind of loving relationship Yahweh sought with us. It made Adam and also Chava much more interesting companions. And so now that, you know, that there had to be a choice that they could choose not Yahweh for them to be able to love Yahweh. Otherwise, it's not choice. It's forced. And when it's forced, it's not love. There had to be an alternative, and they chose that alternative. So now over these 6,000 years where we have been outside the garden, every soul that has been born has been given the same opportunity to choose to know and love Yahweh, to engage in his covenant, to be part of his family, to answer the invitations to meet with him on these 7 days, Sukkah being the conclusion of them, camping out with God, or not. And approximately 1 in 1 million people says yes. That's why we spend so much time in the beginning of this program showing you how truth is so extreme today. It's so unpopular that 1 in 1 million embrace it. And these are God's children, all invited to Sukkah with him. So what we're being invited to participate in is a return to the Garden of Eden. Would you like to spend time in the Garden of Eden with Yahweh? Would you like to have those you love and those who also love Yahweh with you? Would you enjoy having discussions with the author of life and the creator of the universe? Or do you want to camp out in a perfect setting? If that appeals to you, then answer the invitation to attend Sukkah, because that's what God is inviting you to participate in. Sukkah is saying, I want to live in God's home. What is God's home? It's the universe. There were places within the universe that are special to him. Eden was special to him. Yisrael is special to him. Jerusalem is special to him. I wonder if he sent a letter, a memo, to Israel and said, I am really, really upset with you for building homes in Jerusalem because I am anti-home. Especially in Jerusalem. I'm making fun of the leaders of the UK, United States, and France that condemned Israel for building homes in Jerusalem. But if that's something that is of interest to you, then you really ought to answer the invitations that Yahweh has offered and meet with him these 7 times. And now as we approach this evening, Sukkah, for 7 plus 1 days, answer the invitations. Collectively, those invitations will cause you to become immortal, which is a good thing if you want to camp out with God, since he's immortal. You know, why shorten the experience? It'll make you perfect, which is a really good thing, because if you weren't perfect, you're going to feel pretty awkward around God. It's going to cause you to be adopted into his family, which is really ideal, because that means that the creator of the universe, the most powerful force in the universe, the great intellect of the universe, is going to treat you like a son or daughter. It's going to respond to you like a son or daughter, which means rather than being threatening, rather than being fearsome, rather than being in any way, shape, or form demeaning, what you're going to experience is love and being uplifted and being cared for and being protected and being enlightened and having everything done that is in your best interest. That is why following B'Kodom, which means firstborn children, we celebrate the invitation of Shavuot, which is the promise of the Shabbat, two Shabbats celebrated in this Mikra of Sukkah. As a matter of fact, many people recognize the millennial Shabbat being a thousand-year celebration of the Shabbat, that Sukkah and Shabbat are very similar, that it's time that we focus on our relationship with Yahweh. A marvelous realization. Hear the sound in the background. I apologize for it, but having an open house for realtors here in my home in California. We're trying to sell it. People are pulling up and pushing the intercom for the gate, not recognizing that gates are all automatic in this community. But it is a nuisance that I cannot make go away. So, recognizing that Yahweh's only interest is having those who come to know him and love him, those who observe and listen to what he has to say, those who follow his guidance, who value his instructions, come live with him forever. That is what Sukkah is all about. So this is what we read in Kara, called out Leviticus 23:37. These godly and specific appointed and designated meeting times, Moed, of Yahweh. Now, I want to stop here for a moment. I constantly get letters or hear people say, they talk about the Jewish feasts. And nothing drives me, there's a lot of things that drive me bonkers. But that's one of them. They aren't Jewish feasts. They aren't Jewish holidays. Roman Catholicism lied to you when it called these seven invitations to meet with Yahweh Jewish holidays and Jewish feasts. There's a book out called Four Blood Moons, written by a Christian idiot. And in it, there's this notion that these are in commemoration of the Jewish holy days. They're not Jewish. They're of Yahweh. So they are not Jewish holidays. You know, when someone tells people that they're observing Passover, they say, oh, you're Jewish? Do you convert to Judaism? It shows the collective ignorance of people and how effective religion has been at misleading them. You know, if you celebrate Sukkah and Yom Kippurim and Teruah in the fall, instead of Halloween and Christmas, people would think that you're Jewish. And yet, these dates are invitations from Yahweh. There's no Jew that says out there, I'm inviting you to participate in Sukkah. Yeah, come on down to Israel and camp out with me. No. They're invitations from the creator of the universe, Yahweh. He's declaring these invitations in first person, and he's even identifying his name in the midst of it multiple times so that you would not be confused. These are the Moed of Yahweh, the appointed and designated meeting times of Yahweh. Yahweh just so happens to be God's one and only name. He didn't say that these are the meeting times of the Jews, ever. He didn't say that these were Jewish religious holidays, ever. And yet most people are convinced otherwise. Which is to say that most people are like Ben Affleck. They don't think. They spew out unfounded opinions that as if they had merit. But this is not an innocent mistake. If you have been deceived into believing, as most have, that these seven annual invitations to meet with Yahweh, these Moed Mikre, are Jewish religious holidays, Jewish holy days, are Jewish feasts, as opposed to invitations from God to be perfected, become immortal, to become adopted into his family, to be enriched and empowered, and that they are the only means to participate in the covenant. If you have been misled in that regard, then there is no hope for your soul. The best you can hope for is your soul being annihilated upon your death. And if you mislead others regarding these, then you go from your soul being annihilated to spending eternity with Satan in Sheol, incarcerated. So you got to be really careful when you mislead regarding something this important. You should never think, never write, never advocate that these seven invitations to meet with Yahweh are Jewish religious days. And at consequence here is this is the only path to God. The only path home. And to mislabel it is a great crime. So these godly and specific appointed and designated meeting times, Moed, of Yahweh, which relationally and beneficially you are invited to attend, Kara. Kara, therefore, defines Mikra, and Mikre, which is the plural of Mikra, which you are invited to attend, Kara. You are summoned to be called out, to meet, to read, and to recite accordingly as a set-apart Kodesh, Mikre. The invitations to meet with God, these Mikre, these invitations to be called out, to be greeted and to encounter God, are all Kodesh, as is the set-apart spirit. She is Kodesh. She is the Ruach Kodesh, or the spirit set apart. If you want to be set apart unto Yahweh, you need to pay attention to these invitations and respond. He says, you're invited to attend, accordingly, as set-apart Mikre, for the purpose of coming near and approaching, Karab, the feminine manifestation of the light, the adoptive mother who enlightens and elevates. This is the Ruach Kodesh, the set-apart spirit of Yahweh. And he says, so we can approach the set-apart spirit to approach Yahweh. She is a gift which elevates, making us acceptable, an uplifting offering, a reconciling sacrifice for forgiveness, and also the pouring out of the word, a day for his day, reaffirms that Sukkah is about reading and reciting his word. This is the day where through the set-apart spirit, the feminine manifestation of his light, the word of Yahweh is poured out. In fact, the living manifestation of the word of Yahweh is the principal actor of Sukkah. God himself, Yahweh, camping out with us, just as he did in the Garden of Eden. That is the basis of this day. Now he says, as part of the Shabbats of Yahweh, of the Sabbaths of Yahweh, which is the oath and the promise based on seven of Yahweh, and as part of your contribution to the relationship, as part of your vows, and as part of your expression of your freedom of choice, relationally, offer yourself to Yahweh. This is Kara called out 23:38. This is the seventh of seven invitations to meet with God. It occurs in the seventh month. As part of it, there is a seven-day celebration of our relationship with Yahweh. And as part of it, there are two Shabbatons, two special Sabbaths that we enjoy our relationship with God. So as part of these Sabbaths, God is saying, of Yahweh. So if you're observing the Shabbat, are you being Jewish? Of course not. You're paying attention to what God encouraged you to benefit from. So as part of the Shabbat of Yahweh, and as part of your continuing contribution to the relationship, this is something that so many people mistake. They think that their salvation is free. No, it's not. God doesn't save anyone who isn't part of the covenant. And participation in the covenant is not free. Participation in any relationship can't be free. The moment participation in a relationship becomes free, where one party does everything, the other party does nothing, it is a complete and utter waste. It has no value whatsoever. If you're going to engage in a relationship, both parties have to contribute. We contribute to the relationship in many ways. One way is we answer these invitations to meet with God on these feasts. Another way is that we listen to what he has to say. Another way is that we come to know him based upon his word. And then once we come to know him, we learn from him and then embrace this relationship. And then we engage in it. We participate in the relationship. That's why God created us. He says, as part of your vows and promises, we make promises. When you accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, you're making a promise. Just as Yahweh makes a promise relative to the Shabbat. Shabbat means promise. And as part of your expression of your freedom of choice, we were given free will for this specific purpose, to determine whether or not we wanted to answer and respond to Yahweh's invitations to meet with him, to determine whether or not we wanted to embrace the word of God, determine whether or not we wanted to engage in the covenant and learn from our Creator. Do we want to love him or reject him? And, well, the choice is really pretty simple in that regard. The vast majority of people neither love God nor have rejected him. They don't even know him. The vast preponderance of people have been beguiled into forming a mythical relationship with a mythical God. So the overwhelming preponderance of people don't reject God. They don't even know him. They instead replace him. And then they pretend to have a relationship with their replacement God, whether it be Jesus Christ or Allah or Shiva or any other of the various replacements for God. For some it's Mao. For some it was Lenin. For some it's patriotism and Americana and the flag and military appreciation or the founding fathers like Washington and Lincoln. So most people have never expressed their freedom to choose relative to God because they've never come to know him. Well, choosing to form a relationship with a fraud is really no better than choosing to reject him. Anyway, he says, of your own expression, of your freedom to choose, relationally and beneficially, give yourself, entrust yourself to Yahweh. So this is the basis of the second and third of the requirements to participate in the covenant. The second, which follows the prerequisite, which is to to walk away from dependence upon religion and politics and patriotism and militaries and all those kinds of things, to instead trust and rely on Yahweh. When you entrust yourself to someone by trusting and relying on them, you're doing exactly what this is asking. Give yourself to, entrust yourself to Yahweh. It also is consistent with the third request that Yahweh makes for those who wish to participate in the covenant, which is to walk to Him and become perfect. If you walk to Him and become perfect, you're trusting that and relying that the path that He has provided is going to prevail, that it's going to deliver the desired result. And that path that we walk to Him, it culminates with Sukkah, which is to camp out with God. That's the desired result. So this is Kara called out. Leviticus 23:38. Moving on, we read, "Indeed, on the 15th day of the 7th month, time of renewal, when you have harvested your yield from the land, you should celebrate the festival feast of Yahweh for 7 days. With the first and foremost day, there shall be a Shabbaton for resting and reflection, and on the 8th day, a Shabbaton." We'll consider what a Shabbaton is in a moment. Surely, as a marker of emphasis, Acher, Yahweh says, on the 15th day of the 7th month, that will begin today at sundown, month is Kodesh, which is time of renewal, when you have gathered in your yield from the land, you should celebrate, cha'ag, party. A festival feast, a chag. So, chag is festival feast. It means party, celebration. And the verbal root of chag is cha'ag, which is the action of celebrating. Of Yahweh. He didn't even say here of Sukkah. He just wants you to know that when you celebrate this party, when you engage in this celebration on the 15th day of the 7th month, that it's with Yahweh, and that the festival feast is of Yahweh for 7 days. Boy, you think there's a theme here? 7th month? 7th days? With the first and foremost day, there shall be a Shabbaton, a special Sabbath, the 7th day, for resting and reflection. And on the 8th day, a Shabbaton. God's really serious about the Shabbat. And here, there are two Shabbat, two sevens, associated with this celebration of Sukkah, the 7th of His 7 invitations to be called out and to meet. What a Shabbaton represents is a enduring Sabbath that can occur on any day of the week that is just treated as a set-apart day for resting and reflection on what Yahweh is offering from His promise, for His plan of 7. To how everything from the beginning of creation all the way through everything associated with the covenant and His path to meet all follows this same pattern of 7. Yeah, I had someone wrote me the other day who said, you know, I was being foolish for setting the date that Yahusha was going to return, and quoted, one of the hearsay books in the Christian New Testament saying, even Jesus said, no one knows the day, only the Father. And they couldn't think it through to realize that that's not His name. And if He actually said that, then He wouldn't be who He said He was. And He most certainly couldn't be God if He doesn't know what God knows. But the fact is that they don't know because they don't put the pieces together. And the central piece for understanding God's plan is understanding 7 and Shabbaton based upon 7. And that the basis of 7 is 6+1, as it is with these Moed Mikre. 6 steps to God, the 7th being camping out with Him. Everything that God said is based on this promise of 7. And so the Shabbaton is a Shabbat celebration that doesn't take place on any day of the week. Now, in the year 6000 Yah, when He's going to fulfill the Shabbat of Sukkah, it's going to fall on a natural Shabbat, just as the special Shabbaton or Shabbat of matzah did. It's God's way of being perfect, even while not expecting perfection from us. And you shall grasp hold of, on the first and foremost day, the fruit of the tree, the glorious adornment of the fronds of the palm, the branch, the leafy shade trees, and the river willow shoots. These are all symbols of what God is offering. The fruit is the tree of life. The esh, wooden timber, is the upright pillar that forms the upright pillar of the tabernacle itself. The glorious adornment is the garment of light that is given to us by the set-apart Spirit, making us appear perfect in God's eyes. The fronds, the shoots and branches, are symbolic of both the Spirit and of the Messiah. And the branch, of course, is one of the most messianic of all symbols. The river, of course, is the stream of life. And the willow shoots are symbolic of what we find that even Moshe was drawn out of as he existed in the royal family with all of the political and religious connections of Egypt. And he drew the children of Israel away from these things. They're all symbolic. They're all different facets of a diamond that help us understand who Yahweh is as our Father and what He is offering the children of the covenant.